From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight. Later, prophetic visions. It's called 11 Days in May. Here's what's happening. A third person who contracted that deadly mouse-borne hantavirus that we've been talking about during the visit to Yosemite National Park in California has died of this disease as the number now of confirmed U.S. cases grows to 8. U.S. officials sounding a worldwide alert this week over this disease, and a park official has said that up to 10,000 people were thought to be at risk of contracting hantavirus, which is a pulmonary syndrome, from their stays in the park between June and August. Of the 8 U.S. visitors to Yosemite who contracted this disease, all but one fell ill after staying at the park's very popular Curry Village camping area. And now health officials in France are investigating 2 suspected hantavirus cases there of people who may have been exposed while at Yosemite. The creature knocked Lillian Peterson off her feet as she was climbing out of Lake Barcroft after a swim. The 83-year-old woman twisted around to see what attacked her. She noticed one thing: large orange teeth. A 35-pound, 24-inch rabid beaver had bitten her on the back of the leg and would not let go, sparking an ordeal that lasted more than 20 minutes. The woman and a friend battled the animal with canoe paddles, a stick, bare hands as it came at them, time and time again. Peterson was seriously injured. Authorities are now saying such attacks are exceedingly rare in suburban Washington. It was the first in Fairfax County in at least 12 years. The big question: what is causing these animals to go bonkers? Officials in Bermuda urging residents to prepare for the worst there. Hurricane Leslie heading toward the British territory, also bringing very powerful winds and rain. And also, it's a Category 1 right now. It's being felt as far away as the U.S. East Coast. Nokia, Google are doing their very best to spoil next week's iPhone 5 announcement, touting new phones with features such as edge-to-edge screens, augmented reality, and spring-mounted cameras for steadier pictures. Lauren Weinstein with us, the expert on the Internet. This technology war continues to heat up. It's kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially now that we're sort of in the dog and pony show season. We have all these announcements that are coming out now in advance of what we assume will be called the iPhone 5. We don't actually officially, I think, know that it's called the iPhone 5, but it probably is a good bet. So today we had Amazon announcing a bunch of new Kindle tablets, the Kindle Fire HD, all kinds of, you know, different versions, different specs, all of that. And as you were saying, we have in about a week the iPhone 5, probably named, so-named announcement. And then in October, there should be the, again, we don't know the official name, but it's being called the iPad Mini, which is like a 7.85-inch diagonal version of the iPad. You can spend hours looking at these specs and trying to compare the memory, yeah, and the cameras and all this. I think you can kind of cut to the chase, though. What you're really looking at here is a choice of 3 different ecosystems: the Amazon ecosystem, the Apple ecosystem, and the Google ecosystem. That's right. You get to choose which one you want to be in. So if you choose the Amazon ecosystem, you get tablets that put ads up for Amazon, because what they're really trying to do is get you to buy Amazon
their products
and Amazon books.
Sure.
It's a delivery platform. Apple is more involved in selling the hardware. Google is more involved in the different services they have, like email and search and all of that. So it's sort of which one you're going to be in. And I think from the standpoint of, I get asked a lot by people, which one should I buy?
Yeah. You know,
and I say, really, it's don't worry so much about the memory and the speed and all of that. If it puts you in the place you want to be in terms of how you use these things, if you're an ebook reader or a Google Services reader or an Amazon movie watcher, that's the decision to make, because probably a year from now, 2 years from now, you're going to be looking at a whole new generation of these things anyway, and you're going to go through this all again. So why go completely crazy, right?
Well, Lauren, in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what are we talking about technology-wise? I mean, what's left to create?
Well, you will recall that many, many years ago, the head of the patent office, right, in the U.S. was quoted as having said, we should close this office down because this was, you know, way, way back, because there's nothing new to invent, right? So it's always, from where we stand, we try to imagine 5 years from now, 10 years from now. That's a bet I don't like to take, because all it's required is one new development, and all your previous, you know, estimates and guesses are thrown out the window. We know the internet will be faster for most people. We know that the computers will be faster. There's going to be a lot more mobile. Mobile is where all the energy is really That's going right. now. But where it's really going to end up, anyone who wants to take that bet, good luck to them, because I'm not going to fall for that.
Okay, Lauren, thank you so much. Lauren's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, a long time ago in a far-off land, when you wanted to wash clothes, you just had one of your detergent buckets and you dumped it and off you went. Well, things have changed. They still have that. But now they're using these colorful little packets, right? You just take one packet, throw it in your washer, and that's it. What's happening with that? Toddlers around the country are using these handy single-use laundry detergent packets, thinking they are tasty treats. Folks, if you have kids, be very careful. Right now, almost 3,000 kids aged 5 and younger in the United States have swallowed these colorful packets, according to the American Association of Poison Control. That's a 13 cases a day since these things started getting reported. That's a lot. Be careful. Moderate exercise, regular intake of fish oil, right, keeps immobility at bay, according to a study. Findings of a recent trial show that women aged over 65 who received omega-3 fatty acids gained almost twice as much muscle strength following exercise than those taking olive oil. Astronaut Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, will be buried at sea. Armstrong died on August 25th following complications resulting from cardiovascular procedures. He was 82 years old. Wouldn't it be neat, though, if they just launched him to the moon? How traditional would that be? Up next, we're going to be talking about survival, your survival. James Rawls is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. James Wesley Rawls has been a survivalist since his teenage years. He's now a survivalist author, lecturer, editor of the survivalblog.com, a former U.S. Army intelligence officer, held a top secret security clearance with a special background investigation and access to very sensitive compartmented information. Here he is back on Coast to Coast, author of Survivors, a novel of the coming collapse. James, how are you?
Just fine. Thanks for having me on.
Good. My pleasure. And I appreciate this. These are very interesting times these days. You know, you have looked at survival for a number of years. Would you say now, James, may be the most critical time in our career, in our lives, in our future?
I would say so. Things seem to be coming to a head economically, and it has me quite concerned. I believe that with the debt levels that the U.S. government has generated, and with the mountains of consumer debt to match, we're at the cusp of a major change economically. I think we're very likely to see a stock market collapse. We're very likely to see a repudiation of the U.S. dollar, and that would be following a repudiation of U.S. treasuries by foreign investors.
What is propping things up now? I mean, today the stock market zoomed. Things just seem to be, you know, starting to, you know, plod along again. What's propping this up?
Well, it's all make-believe money. It's all money that's been created through what they euphemistically call quantitative easing, which is a form of monetization, where the government is basically buying its own debt. And that can't go on for too long before major inflation ensues. It's highly inflationary.
It reminds me of the old game with the pea under the walnut shells, and they just keep moving them around, and you're trying to find the pea under the walnut shell. How long can they keep this game going?
Well, quite some time. And in fact, I think we would have already seen a failure in confidence in the U.S. dollar if it weren't for the fact that the euro is in even worse shape, and the dollar is at least temporarily being seen as a safe haven.
Right.
So But that can't go on forever, though. At some point, people are going to realize that our emperor has no clothes either. And at that point, the foreign investors are going to demand a higher rate of return on treasury paper, and that will be the key trigger to unravel the whole ball of wax.
But we don't know when that could come.
No, and it's more or less a psychological breaking point, because the debt levels that exist per capita and, you know, versus GDP are comparable on both sides of the Atlantic. So the fact that it took place in Europe before it took place here was more or less a psychological thing rather than a purely, mathematical thing. So it's very difficult to determine when that breaking point will come with the U.S. dollar. But one thing is for certain, we're going to see that happen certainly within the next 10 years, probably within the next 2 years.
How long can people take this kind of pressure if they're unemployed, if they're losing houses, if things just aren't going their way? At what point do they start to do civil unrest things than they've been doing?
There'll be protests and riots, and eventually the riots will get out of hand. But we haven't even really seen real pain here in the United States.
No, we really haven't.
Like, if you look at what's going on in Greece right now, where they've instituted the so-called austerity measures, that's the real pain.
Unemployment up 24% in Greece.
Yeah, we haven't seen that here in the States yet. And when we do, that's where the revulsion point will come, and people will take to the streets and first start throwing epithets and later start throwing bricks.
Well, here, 47 million Americans on food stamps. What would have happened if those 47 million people did not have some kind of government assistance at this point? Would they be the ones?
Oh, I think we would have already had a revolution.
Yeah.
The one thing that frightens me is that if we ever had a solar storm or an EMP event, it could take down our telecommunication system. And food stamps are no longer printed food stamps. They're now EBT cards, and they're all handled by a centralized computer system. What will happen if we ever have some kind of electromagnetic hiccup that takes that system down, and suddenly everyone's EBT cards or SNAP cards are no longer valid?
They don't work. Also, your ATMs.
We will have riots within hours.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? They'll be breaking down store windows. Mm-hmm. To get at the goods.
Right. And in fact, there was a news story just yesterday or the day before about Greece, and where a bunch of trade unionists stormed a number of grocery stores in Athens, and they took over $3 million worth of merchandise in an organized looting spree, where they basically had all the union members come in with shopping carts. And they, you know, they tried to put a political face on it. They tried to make it look like a political movement because they're all carrying banners for their union.
Yeah.
But it was still looting by any other name.
Well, when people have to survive, whether it's to go and get medicine for your family or food for your family, people believe anything is justified in order to do that, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do. In fact, the history of the 20th century, we saw repeats of that over and over again on many different continents. That psychology, once it gets started, is very difficult to stop. It's almost like the psychology that I refer to often when it comes to inflation. Once you start to have inflation, you start to have the expectation of future and increased inflation, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, once you have public protests about the cost of food or the availability of different goods or services, once those protests start, they'll continue and they'll grow to the point where even people who weren't even part of the movement originally get caught up in it. And the next thing you know, you have thousands and thousands of people in these organized events that are systematically looting.
At what point do we see specific signs, James, that would show us that this could happen?
Well, I think the key trigger will be a turn in interest rates. As I mentioned before, foreign creditors at some point are going to insist on a higher rate of return on American Treasury paper.
That's right.
When that happens, that's going to reset the prime rate here in the States.
And they're fighting that, aren't they? They don't want to do that.
They're dragging their feet tremendously. And one of the reasons we've seen this false prosperity is because of what's called ZIRP, which is the zero interest rate policy, which is absolutely unrealistic. It has no connection with reality whatsoever, but they're doing their best to jumpstart the economy by keeping interest rates at absurdly low levels.
But it hasn't jumpstarted. Not really.
They're barely keeping things afloat, even though you can get a home loan at around 3% right now for a 30-year mortgage.
Well, see, but the part of problem is it's not the interest rate. It's having the income and the job to pay the payment.
Right. Yeah, they can put interest rates, you know, to zero or even what in Japan, what they called super zero, where they're effectively paying you to take the money. And if people have no jobs, it doesn't make any difference.
It won't have any effect.
At that point, they'll be pushing on a string.
This fourth quarter will be interesting in terms of retail. This is always supposed to be the biggest quarter of the year for retail establishments. I don't know, for example, how much the internet will bite into it, but it's going to be interesting. What does your gut tell you, James?
I think we're going to see a very weak Christmas buying season. And I also think that the recent blip in home sales is going to fall off again. There's just far too many foreclosures on the market that are putting a negative pressure on home prices. And it'll be years before all those foreclosures work their way through the system.
Well, in the uptake, I think, in home sales, the reason why they're up, I think people are buying them because they're bargains.
Oh, relatively, yes. But the problem is the supply side. There's a tremendous number of homes that are in the process of being foreclosed that the banks are reluctantly putting on the market. They're dragging their feet because it hurts their bottom line.
Right.
And there's what's a huge shadow inventory of foreclosed houses that are not even listed officially anywhere.
Will they sell them privately? If you go up, let's say they foreclosed on a $300,000 house.
Well, the thing is, it has to actually be fully foreclosed. The bankers are even delaying the foreclosure process itself because they don't want to build shadow inventory.
Are they letting people stay in these houses?
Yes, people are squatting in these houses, and in some cases, these are million-dollar houses that they're sitting in, and they're not paying a penny of interest or a penny of principal. All they're paying is their property taxes.
Why do they pay? Well, I guess you could sell the property at a property tax sale, couldn't you?
Right. They know that the bankers won't foreclose on them for months, but if they fail to pay their property taxes,
that they're out.
They're out, yes, because the county will take the property and they'll.
Let me ask you about that, James, for a moment. And then in the next half hour, I want to talk about your tips on surviving because you're an expert at that. If somebody goes and buys the property tax bill at an auction, they get that house, right? What has happened to that mortgage that the house was supposed to be collateralized with?
Well, that depends on the jurisdiction that you're in. But in many cases, the bankers are the third guy in line. They're out of luck.
So why don't they buy the property tax? Why would they walk from the mortgage when they could just easily pay the property tax?
As I mentioned before, the property owners, by and large, are wisely continuing to keep up their tax payments.
Well, let me ask you this. Can we assume that if they haven't paid the property tax, the chances are they're not paying their mortgage?
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
The mortgage is the first thing to go. A lot of times people are continuing to make, you know, their other payments. They're making their car payments but not making their house payments.
That's because they know they can stay there for as long as they think
they can. It's much easier to tow a car away.
Yeah, that is true. Stay with us, James. We're going to come back in a moment. James' website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, survivalblog.com, author of Survivors and also How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It. Let's talk about some survival tips when we come back, and then we'll keep him next hour for phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, James Wesley Rawls with us as we talk about survival and just to stay tough. James, how many people come up to you these days, or what are the responses on your survival blog that they truly believe there's some impending problem?
Oh, I would say the majority at this point. It's obvious that we're nearing a trigger point, and it's not a matter of when, but of if, but when. It's a matter of timing. Well, it's difficult to predict because there's a lot of imponderables. There's a lot of variables with the situation in Europe right now. We don't know how long that's going to play out and how it's going to play out because that's temporarily boosting the dollar.
So the longer the European situation stays in a muck, the better off it is for us?
Yes, in effect. The dollar will actually strengthen slightly. And we'll continue to see foreign capital come into American markets. That's one of the things that's been running the Dow up is foreign investment. Because the European markets are not seen as safe any longer.
Does any economist have a clue? I mean, obviously the people who control the Federal Reserve are not stupid people. You know, Bernanke and those folks, they're very intelligent. We may not agree with what they do, but again, they're not stupid people. What are they trying to do to fix this?
They're not really doing anything.
No, they're just they print more money.
Perpetuating the system. They're trying to reinflate bubbles, even though the only proper thing to do is to let the economy run its course to unwind the volume of debt that's built up. That's a very painful process, and it's politically unacceptable. It's the sort of thing that actually topples governments. So they're taking what they see as the easy way out, which is attempting to reinflate, and they're not being very successful. In fact, at this point, deflation in the short term is winning out. They're pumping as much money as they can into the system, and it's getting sucked up by bankers who are parking it in cash equivalents right now for safety. They're not lending that money out.
If you've got a job, things are relatively okay for you. If you don't have a job, it's a mess. And I've never seen a situation, James, where we're in this continental divide where you've got those who have and those who have not.
Yes.
The gap's getting bigger.
The gap is definitely getting bigger. And the people, it's not just unemployment, it's also underemployment. There's a lot of people right now who have advanced college degrees who are doing very menial jobs just to make their rent payment and to put food on the table.
Well, you know, I was saying a few months ago that I think we had 200 broadcast graduates in my class at the University of Detroit, and I think only a couple of us got jobs in broadcasting. You know, all the rest went into other fields or got jobs and other things. They weren't able to get broadcasting jobs. I bet it's worse now.
Oh, it certainly is. And the volume of college debt that's been generated just in the last 10 years has been tremendous. People are tying their hopes on a college degree, and they're essentially making themselves debt slaves for the rest of their lives to pay off that college education. They're taking on huge loans. And my advice to any young people that are listening is, because the economy is weak, to basically put yourself on a six-year plan for college, work your way through college, and come out at the end debt-free. You'll thank yourself for it.
And pay as you go.
Yes. There aren't any jobs right now anyway, so it's better to work part-time jobs, pay your way through school, not take on any debt, and come out of the whole process debt-free.
My 18-year-old granddaughter just went to college in Missouri. She wants to be an environmental specialist. might have a job when she graduates. But I'm sure that bill, which Grandpa's going to help, is going to be $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, won't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are the times we're living in, George. It's a time of great uncertainty for a lot of people. And I think it's one reason my blog and other blogs like it have become so popular, and why novels like mine have become so popular, is people are recognizing the fragility of society, and they're taking the next logical step, which is to think, well, what do I need to do to prepare my family? What steps do I need to take to give myself a better chance of pulling through this? Because they can see that, you know, the edge of the cliff. they can see that doom is upon us as a nation.
Is this not a cycle, though?
Well, it is. It's a cycle for pretty much all nations. But what's unique this time is we're truly in a global economy with a tremendous amount of foreign trade and international finance that has really never existed. There were parallels, say, in the 1930s. And the Depression of the 1930s is, of course, what triggered World War II. But now it's even more interconnected. It's what Ashley Brilliant calls intertwined. We've got a situation where a finance decision that's made in Japan or Germany can have huge ramifications here in the United States.
What would you tell a 25-year-old man or woman who has to pay $1,000 a month for an apartment, a car payment of $300-$400 a month, and, you know, expenses? What would you tell them if they had even somewhat of a job?
Well, I think people need to reorder their finances. They need to sit down, pray about it, and sit down with a yellow legal pad and work out a real budget and try to figure out what expenses they can truly do without. Do you really need to buy a $4 latte at Starbucks? Do you really need a giant plasma television? Do you really need a jet ski? People need to make some very tough decisions, because unless they reorder their finances now, pay down some of their debt, and get their house in order, literally, in terms of food storage, for example, unless they make those tough decisions now, when calamity does come, they're going to be completely underprepared. And if they go into this with a high debt level and 3 or 4 days' worth of food on the shelf, they could end up as statistics.
Well, that's true. Okay, so let's go through some of the specifics, James, that you might recommend that people do.
Well, I guess the absolute top of the list would be water filtration. I think it's very important for people to recognize that there's any number of situations that could cause an interruption in civic water supplies. And if the power grid goes down, all bets are off.
The water won't pump, will it?
Water won't pump. And even people that are on well water, unless they're on very shallow wells that can be hand pumped, are going to be out of luck.
That's right.
So people need to have a water filter, because they may have to depend on water from runoff from their roofs. They ought to go ahead and set up diverter valves on their downspouts from their house, and set up rain barrels. If you're living in a house that has an older roof on it, if it currently has a composition roof or a shake roof, I recommend that you switch to a metal roof, both for better fire protection and because you'll end up with water with just microscopic contaminants in it compared to a composition roof.
You might have a city code problem there, right?
Well, or you might have a homeowners association problem if you live in an HOA that has
slate
that are restrictive that say you need to have a shake roof.
Yeah.
Or you need, or whatever. Actually, most CCNRs would prefer to see people upgrade from a composition roof to a metal roof. So it's not an issue in most places, but that's one of the things that I recommend. Water has got to be at the very top of the list, followed by food storage, And then there's a whole panoply of things that you need to figure out that anyone who wears prescription glasses should buy several sets of spare glasses. Anyone who currently wears contact lenses needs to buy several sets of traditional glasses. There's a company called Zenni Optical. It's Z-E-N-N-I. If you do a web search on Zenni Optical or Zenni Optical on the internet, they sell glasses for as low as $4 a pair.
I buy, you know, I use readers, right? Because I'm over 40 years old. And I have them everywhere. They're cheap. I don't care if I sit on them and crack them because I've got another one. But I've got them in my cars, in my house, in my offices, everywhere. I've got them in suitcases.
Have distance lenses as well. If anyone nearsighted should have several sets of prescription glasses and don't pay top dollar. Zenni is just one of several companies on the internet.
So what you're saying, if I hear you right, James, use your essentials that you use in your day-to-day living and inventory them and stock up on them.
Right. It's just a matter of, on food storage, start out with the staple foods you use on a regular basis and start doubling up and tripling up. And you want to, of course, get some long-term storage food as well and some foods that don't require any cooking whatsoever, things like MREs.
Right.
But it's just a matter of gradually stocking up on those staple supplies.
Well, here's the big question, though. How long do you stock up? I mean, because do we know if this is going to last a week, a month, years?
A lot longer than that. I would recommend that people stock up for as much as 3 years if they have the storage space.
3 years?
3 years, yes. Because you also have to consider that you're probably going to have family members, the ones that are currently teasing you for stocking up are going to be the ones on your doorstep the day after everything happens. They'll be there with their hat in their hand, looking very sheepish, saying, "Oh, well, you were right, and can you help me out?"
It's like a Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah, so you want to be able to help people. Charity is very important. So if you miscalculate and it only turns out to be a six-month problem and you have a three-year food supply, well, then you have enough food for six families for 6 months.
Now, is this plan based on an economic downfall or getting hit by some asteroid or the grid going down?
The great thing about food storage is it applies to all of the above.
Yes.
Food storage
and water
is crucial, whether it's EMP, whether it's a solar flare, whether it's an economic collapse, whether it's a pandemic. It doesn't matter. You're going to need food because any of those situations are going to cause a disruption in the chains of supply and probably a disruption of the power grid. And if the grid goes down, again, all bets are off.
What's the name of the game? Survive? Live?
Oh, you want to survive and thrive. Because it's only the people that are well-prepared that are squared away and not worried about where they're going to get their next meal that are going to have their heads up and looking at the big picture who are going to be in a position to stand up and just say no if martial law is instituted. If people are worried about where they're going to get their very next meal, the last thing they're going to be thinking about is politics and restoration of constitutional government. But it's the people that are well prepared, who have that all squared away, who are going to be in a position to do the right thing.
Are we headed toward Mad Max? I remember Mel Gibson's first movie. I mean, this incredible situation.
It could very well be a complete socioeconomic collapse. Odds are, if the power grid stays up, we'll muddle through. And
now, this is worldwide you're talking about, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
We could see a situation, a Mad Max type situation, if the power grids go down. If the grids are down, I don't think anyone is going to be able to maintain order. Even if martial law were declared, there certainly are not enough troops to even protect a small portion of the infrastructure, much less keep all the 18-wheelers rolling and all the trains rolling and all the power plants running and everything else. So, yes, that is the worst-case scenario. The power grid goes down and doesn't come back up. In fact, there's a new NBC drama television series that's airing starting, I think it's the 17th of September, called Revolution.
Yeah.
And that's the basic premise of the show.
That's right.
And I saw the pilot for the show, and it's a little bit cheesy, but
overdone.
Well, typical Hollywood.
Of
you
course,
know.
It's TV.
But it does get people thinking, and if you think through the ramifications of a grid collapse that goes on for years, they're really tremendous because everyone with a chronic medical condition, everyone who is on a CPAP machine at night who has sleep apnea, anyone who has a implanted pacemaker.
If it happens in the wintertime, you freeze to death.
Yeah, there's going to be a massive die-off if the power grids go down.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. How many people, James? Oh, go ahead.
Okay. I would predict that as much as 75% of the American population could perish.
Wow. How many people, if you polled, would say, what percent? Nah, I'm not going to worry about it. Yeah, I'm going to worry about it. I just don't know. What do you think?
Well, maybe 10% of the population has a full realization of what could happen.
If that.
But only 2% of the population is actively preparing.
Right.
Because the other 8% are in denial. They're like, oh, well, somehow the government will handle it. Or we'll, you know, the economy will pull through. Or the power grids will stay up. Or whatever.
And they'll be in denial until something happens.
Right. And then they're going to be just another statistic because they'll be just another unprepared family. What I'm hoping is that the listeners of Coast to Coast, who are very intelligent, well-read, articulate people, a much larger percentage of them are going to be listening to this and saying, okay, it's time to actually do something.
And I think actually, many of them, James, probably have already started.
I think they have, a good portion of them. I've always been impressed by the listenership of Coast to Coast. They're definitely a cut above, and a much larger percentage of them are actively preparing.
Yes.
But my hope is that maybe half of the listeners now are going to go ahead and actively prepare, stock away the food, get the water filtration, buy the medical gear, communications equipment, firearms, and all the training that goes along with those,
mm-hmm.
so that they can become confident and competent and pass along those skills and help out other people.
It's like buying an insurance policy, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I look at it as life assurance.
You may never have to use it. You may never tap into it. But when you do need it, you're sure glad you have it.
Right. And it also comes in handy, even if you're just laid off from your work. If you have a one-year food supply, that's a very large portion of your budget that you don't have to worry about if you've got that food squared away.
We all hate auto insurance until we get hit.
Right.
You know what? And we say, thank God this car's insured. Simple as that. Wouldn't people go to your blog? Can they? Is it interactive, or do they just?
Well, yes. There's a search box there, and everything on my blog site is absolutely free of charge. There's no secret members area with a password or whatever. It's all there for free. The archives are very deep and very rich, and just about any topic on preparedness, they'll find some in-depth articles, whether it's food storage or communications or weapons or whatever. It's all there, free for the taking, and I highly recommend that people delve into the archives when they find appropriate articles that match their circumstances, that they do two things. First, that they put a copy on a memory stick, because the Internet is not forever.
It's true.
Power grids go down, they won't have access to it unless they have it on a stick and then can read it on their laptop. That's assuming they have a small photovoltaic power system at home. And print out hard copies of the most important articles and make a binder.
And keep them. James, we're going to take this break. We're going to come back and take an hour of phone calls with you as we talk about survivors and how to survive the end of the world as we know it.